Good morning. Welcome to the public consultation meeting for our proposed rules to 317.1. My name is Mike Krause. I'm an assistant deputy executive officer at our planning and rules division here at the South Coast AQMD. As a public consultation meeting, this meeting will be recorded. So just want to make folks aware of that. As a public consultation meeting, it's similar to our public workshops, if you're familiar with those, and a little different than our working group meetings. So you're coming in on our Zoom webinar platform this morning, and therefore you're on our attendee side. We're going to keep folks in those attendee side while the staff here at the SCAQMD will be on the panelist side and presenting to you today. We're going to go ahead and give the full staff presentation and then open it up to questions. So folks will be able to do that. And when that time comes, not if, when that time comes, we'll allow you to make comments by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of the screen. We'll go ahead and unmute you and give you the ability to go ahead and speak. We do want to ask folks, however, when they do make comments, to introduce themselves and their affiliations so everyone knows who's making comment. So again, this is our public consultation meeting. It is being recorded. However, we are not going to limit folks on the timing that we normally would do on making comments, but we do ask folks to be respectful that there are others who may want to make comment. So to make your comments succinct, to the point, of course, germane to the subject matter, et cetera. Again, my name is Mike Krause. I'm an assistant deputy executive officer in our planning and rules division. This presentation we're showing you today has been sent out along with the link to the meeting. It also can be found on our proposed rules page. If you're familiar with that or not familiar with it, we have a proposed rules page, which is a table of all the rules we're working on, amending, and seeking to adopt in this case. You will locate that in numerical order. You can click either the name or the title of the rule. It takes you to a separate page that will provide all the other presentations that we've given in our working group meetings or previous rule versions or draft staff reports, et cetera. So lots of documentations and supporting documentations can be found there. So, okay, let's go ahead then and introduce the folks here at the South Coast AQMD on our side. Kalam.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning, everyone. My name is Kalam Chong, Planning and Rules Manager, and our team handles the development of Proposed Rule 317.1. And I'm going to pass it on to Neil.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Neil Fujiwara. I'm a Program Supervisor in Planning and Rules. My team reports to Kalam, and we work on the Proposed Rule 317.1. Go ahead, Brittany.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Brittany Gallivan, and I'm an air quality specialist reporting to Neil Fujiwara on this rule.
Great. And from our legal department, Sherry.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sherry Hani-Zavara, and I am a principal deputy in our legal department. And Catherine?
Good morning. I'm Catherine Roberts. I'm a senior deputy district counsel in our general counsel's office.
Excellent. And I just saw Dr. Lee's face on the screen there. Where she
Good morning.
Is. There she is. Okay.
Good morning. I'm Seng Mi Lee. I'm Planning and Rules Manager overseeing SIP AQMP development and modeling and inventory. Thank you.
Great. And we also have Guy, who's from our information management team, supporting us today. And Mark Taylor, one of the assistants for our board member. So welcome, Mark. Okay, I think we're all set. Staff, do we have anything else we need to highlight on housekeeping? Are we good to go? All right, let's jump in. Brittany.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much, Mike. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this public consultation meeting for proposed Rule 317.1, Clean Air Act non-attainment fees for the 8-hour ozone standards. We do look forward to having you participate today. And your interest in this rule development is important to us, and we do encourage dialogue throughout the presentation. So today, we're going to go over the agenda for today's presentation. First, we have an introduction. Then we're going to go over the ozone standards. Next, we'll go over the Clean Air Act Section 185 non-attainment fees, followed by the proposed rule language. Then we'll discuss some CEQA and socioeconomic impacts. We'll discuss what's ahead, and then we'll have open general discussion. So now we're going to go into the introduction. So first we have the meeting information. We're on slide 4. And just to reiterate that the working group meetings are, remote via Zoom platform. And we do want to take time to listen to your comments. And then for the benefit of those that are calling in, we are going to go over the slide numbers. And if you have questions, you may raise your use the raise hand feature to speak. And if you're participating, if you're a participant joining on a computer, you may select the hand symbol. And we will have an opportunity for discussion at the end, but we do encourage dialogue throughout the meeting at the end of each section of the presentation. Now we're on slide five. We have the a link to the working to the materials for this presentation, and all the materials are available on the South Coast AQMD Proposed Rule and Proposed Rule Amendments website. And you just navigate to Proposed Rule 317.1. Now we're on slide six. If you wish to stay informed and be included in future announcements regarding these rule development efforts, we welcome you to sign up to receive the latest updates via our newsletter subscription website. And you can subscribe by entering your contact information, checking the box adjacent to the lists that you are interested in, and then by clicking on the subscribe button at the bottom of the page. And if you're interested in email specifically related to 317.1, then you need only subscribe to this list. Now we're going to go over the ozone standards. We're on slide eight, where we have background on the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. They're established by the US EPA for various air pollutants in order to be protective of human health. For ozone, there are four NACs that are identified by the year in which they were established. The Air Quality Management Plan, AQMP, is developed to describe pathways to attainment with the NACs, and it becomes part of the state implementation plan. Non-attainment areas are designated based on their exceedance level as marginal, moderate, serious, severe, and extreme. And the US EPA establishes attainment deadlines based on these classifications where there's more time that's provided for areas with worse air quality. On slide nine, we have an overview of the South Coast AQMD regions. And the South Coast Air Basin, Area 1, covers LA County, Orange County, and San Bernardino County. Then we have the Riverside County portion of the region, which consists of Coachella Valley and the Mojave Desert Air Basin. And the South Coast portion of Mojave Desert Air Basin is designated as unclassifiable. On slide 10, we have an overview of the National Ambient Air Quality Standards for ozone. So in the first column, you can see the year that they were established. And then in the next column, we have the averaging time. The first one is for 1 hour, and the rest of them are all 8 hour standards for average concentration. And then we have the NACS level, and you can see with each new promulgated rule, the concentration gets lower. And then we have which ones are revoked. It's only the first two that are currently revoked. And then we have the regions, which is again the South Coast Air Basin and Coachella Valley, and the Mojave Desert isn't included in this. And then we have the current attainment status for each of these NACs, and then the attainment deadlines. And now we're going to go over to the Clean Air Act Section 185 non-attainment fee. We're on slide 12. the Clean Air Act 185 fee, it requires areas that are severe or extreme non-attainment to attain the NACs by the applicable attainment date, which we went over previously. And the Clean Air Act requires that each major stationary source of VOCs and or NOx within the area either reduce their emissions 20% below the baseline or pay a fee to the state. And a major stationary source in our region is defined as having a potential to emit of 10 tons per year or more of VOC and or NOx. And we currently have it estimated to be about 320 major stationary source facilities that could potentially be impacted by this rule. And the fee, it would be collected for each calendar year beginning after the attainment date, and it would continue until the area is redesignated as an attainment area for that ozone standard. And then also the standards are independent, so fee collection is independent as well, and the different standards are evaluated separately. And then it doesn't go away if the ozone standard is revoked or if a new one's promulgated. And then if we do not meet the requirements of the Clean Air Act Section 185 and we're not administering and enforcing it properly, then the US EPA would be required to collect these fees. And then now we're on slide 13, which is a significant slide of this presentation. We've discussed each ozone standard, and this slide basically summarizes the key content for the Clean Air Act Section 185. And so here you can see the attainment deadlines, when the date is for the South Coast AQMD to address Section 185, when the non-attainment fees would begin, which was in 2008 and 2011 for the one-hour standard. And this was done via a fee equivalency because the standard was revoked and South Coast AQMD had emission reductions surplus to the applicable SIP. The non-attainment fees for the 1997 ozone standard would begin in 2025. And although this standard is revoked and eligible for fee equivalency approach, South Coast AQMD does not have emission reductions surplus to the applicable SIP for this option. The non-attainment fees for the 2008 ozone standard would begin in 2033, and this standard has not been revoked and is thus not eligible for a fee equivalency approach. And then as the non-attainment fees for the 2015 ozone standard would not likely begin until 2039, which is 16 years from now, we plan to address this section 185 non-attainment fees later on. And then, you know, to summarize, the South Coast AQMD can only collect fees to satisfy the Section 185 requirement for the 1997 and 2008 ozone standards.
As a reminder, questions and comments will be taken at the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Okay, we're on slide 14. So just to summarize everything, Rule 317.1 would be the Cleaner Act non-attainment fees for the 8-hour ozone standards. And this rule would provide a compliance pathway for Clean Air Act Section 185 requirements for both the 1997 and 2008 ozone NACs. For the 1997 8-hour standard, we don't currently have adequate funding available to utilize the fee equivalency approach. And then for the 2008 8-hour ozone standard, it has not been revoked, so we may not utilize the fee equivalency approach. And it's really important to note here that if the South Coast AQMD does not adopt a SIP-approved rule, facilities would be subject to fees, which instead of being collected by the South Coast AQMD, would be collected by the US EPA. And so now we're going to go over the preliminary draft rule language. On slide 16, we have the structure for proposed Rule 317.1, and we have the subdivisions here, which is purpose, applicability, definitions, requirements, and exemptions. On slide 17, we have the purpose, which, as indicated earlier, is for this rule of development is to comply with the Clean Air Act should the area fail to attain the 1997 and or 2008 8-hour ozone standards. And then on slide 18, we have the applicability. So this rule is applicable when the US EPA makes a final finding of failure to attain the aforementioned standards and applies to a major stationary source within the South Coast AQMD jurisdiction, which is defined as having a PTE emissions of 10 tons per year or more of VOC and NOx. And if a major stationary source is not a major stationary source of VOCs and or NOx, then no non-attainment fee would be required. And then again, the standards are independent, so fee collection is independent as well, and the different standards are evaluated separately. And then on slide 19, we have a key definition, which is the baseline emissions. This is just a snapshot of the complete definition, which is in the rule language. And this baseline is consistent with the Clean Air Act requirements for a facility that was a major stationary source throughout the entirety of the attainment year. The baseline would be the lower of the following for the attainment year. It would either be the actual emissions, not to exceed allowed emissions. And this is to prevent baseline emissions from being inflated due to violations. Or it would be the amount of emissions allowed in total. And then each subparagraph describes a different scenario. The first is shown here. And then the second is for a facility that becomes a major stationary source during the attainment year. And then the last is for a facility that becomes a major stationary source after the attainment year. On slide 20, we have the fee assessment. So the South Coast AQMD will annually assess the fees, and we've provided an example timeline here. So this is just an example for the 1997 8-hour ozone standard. So 2024 would be the attainment year. 2025 is when the initial fee assessment year would occur. And then in 2026, we would have a second fee assessment year, and the facility would be submitting their annual emissions report for the previous year, 2025. And then South Coast AQMD would also be assessing the facility's obligations for the previous year, 2025. And then this would continue on and until it's no longer applicable. On slide 21, we have the fee determination. So this calculation is consistent with the Clean Air Act requirements. And the fee rate, it is adjusted annually for inflation based on the consumer price index. And an example calculation is provided on the next slide of this presentation. On slide 22, here we have the example of the fee calculation for VOCs. The calculation methodology is set by Section 185 of the Clean Air Act, and the annual US EPA Clean Air Act Section 185 fee rate is annually set by the US EPA. The fee is calculated per facility, per pollutant, VOC or NOx as applicable, and the fee is for emissions of VOC or NOx in excess of 80% of the baseline amount. Once established, the baseline is a constant for that standard. Facilities know their operations best, so if you wanted to try and determine what your facility-specific fee would be, then you could just project future years using this calculation. And this is an example for VOCs, but you'd follow the same procedure for NOx. And if a major stationary source of VOCs and is a major stationary source for VOCs and NOx, then the total annual Clean Air Act non-attainment fee would just be a sum of the totals for VOC and for NOx. On slide 23, we cover the annual reporting and payment. Rule 301(e)(10) requires both the annual emissions report be completed and annual emissions fee payment be received by the 75th day following January 1st. The annual reporting and payment would include the years prior to the US EPA making a final finding that a basin has failed to attain the applicable standard. And also these annual emission reports will be used to determine fee obligations. On slide 24, we have the payment due dates. So the initial invoice due date will be 365 days from the invoice issuance. And this allows, the initial invoice, like I said, could include years previous to the US EPA making the finding of failure. So we've allowed additional time for facilities to include that into their budget by allowing 365 days for this payment. And then subsequent invoices would just be due either by December 15th or 75 days from issuance, whichever is later. And then we do think it's an unlikely occurrence, but we do have a requirement in here for the executive officer, which would limit the ability to extend the invoice due dates by 365 days. And this just ensures that we're continually administering the Clean Air Act appropriately for these non-attainment fees. Now we're on slide 25. Consistent with the California Health and Safety Code, a facility has 120 days from invoice to make payment before potential actions to revoke all permits to operate. And now we're on slide 26, which covers the courtesy notices. So the South Coast AQMD will be sending out notifications of rule applicability and then also of baseline emissions. And a facility will have 60 days from the notice to either to confirm or contest the notice. And this allows facilities an opportunity to provide additional information, which could be relevant in these determinations. Now we're on slide 27. We have a portion of the requirements for the alternative baseline emissions. We developed this language to be consistent with the existing guidance for the alternative baselines for the 1 hour standard. The South Coast AQMD must comply with the Clean Air Act and US EPA guidance. Currently, there's no alternative baseline that may be used for the 8 hour standards. So this is a tentative pathway, and it is subject to US EPA review and approval. We have this guard in place for this provision, which states that the alternative baseline may not be used unless the EPA has issued guidance consistent with this rule language. And the majority of the requirements are on the next slide. Now we're on slide 28, where we have the remaining portion of the requirements for the alternative baseline emissions. And again, this is consistent with the alternative baseline for the 1 hour standard. And it's for facilities that have a regular cyclical varying emissions from year to year, which may be eligible to use this alternative baseline. And then we also have a link here to the guidance that was provided by the US EPA. But in general, it would be that the facility would be using a facility without an electric steam generating would be unit would be using two of the years in the previous 10 years that are most representative to determine what their baseline emissions would be. And then there's also an option for facilities that do have an electric steam generating unit, which would be most likely two within the previous 5 years, or if they have justification, a different 5 years. Now we're on slide 29, where we discuss the alternative baseline emissions request payment. So for the submission of the alternative baseline emissions request, there would be a fee that is equal to the time worked by the South Coast AQMD staff for the evaluation. And we have it assessed at an hourly rate, which is consistent with other rates in our evaluation fees for Rule 301. And then on slide 30, we have the exemptions from the rule. So the first is for an extension year. So if the US EPA grants an extension year before the failure to attain, fee obligations will not apply to that year. The second is for when fees conclude. Fees will cease if the area is redesignated as in attainment or if the anti-backsliding requirements are terminated. And now we're going to go into the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, and socioeconomic impacts. We're on slide 32. the proposed Rule 317.1, it's been developed as a government funding mechanism to satisfy federal requirements without involving a commitment to any specific project that could result in a potential significant physical impact on the environment. And the project and the proposed rule 317.1 is not a project pursuant to CEQA guidelines. On slide 33, we have the socioeconomic impact assessment. It is not required because air quality or emission limitations will not be significantly affected, but we are preparing a socioeconomic impact assessment for this proposed rule. The impact assessment is going to consider the type of affected industries, the range of probable cost to industry or business, the impact on employment and regional economy, and it will be made available 30 days prior to the public hearing, which is scheduled for June 7th currently. And now we're going to take a look at what's ahead for this rule development. We're on slide 35, where we're covering the spending of funds. So these funds, they would be spent supporting South Coast AQMD efforts to improve air quality. And in the development for proposed rule 317.1, we're exclusively working to set the regulatory framework for collection of these fees in order to comply with the Clean Air Act. The South Coast AQMD does anticipate that there will be resources needed to implement proposed rule 317.1 in the future, and is considering setting aside 10% of the collected fees for administration and implementation. And the focus is timely adoption of this rule. There are a lot of like logistics and South Coast AQMD will need to figure out prior to implementation of this rule. And aside from this, guidance on the spending of these funds would be determined through a future public process separate from the focus of this rule development effort. And this is mainly due to the substantial resources that will be needed for implementation, the uncertainty in the amount of the future fees that we will receive, and then also our inability to commit funds, which aren't yet guaranteed. And the fees would be potentially would not potentially be assessed until calendar year 2026 for the 1997 standard and 2034 for the 2008 standard, which is in the future. And then also readily available technologies will continue to advance, and South Coast AQMD emission reduction strategies will continually be evolving. So on slide 36, we have the next steps for this rule development process. So today we're here at the public consultation meeting. The close of public comment period for the preliminary draft proposed rule and staff report will be April 17th. The draft rule language and staff report is expected early May. And then we'll be having the stationary source committee presentation, which is expected to occur on April 19th. And then there'll be a public hearing where the South Coast AQMD Governing Board will make a decision on the final rule, which is scheduled for June 7th. And we really appreciate everyone's review of the preliminary draft rule language. Providing early input allows us more time to work with you to address any potential issues. And we're available for discussion and would really appreciate your feedback by Wednesday, April 17th. And on slide 38, we have the contact information for our staff that's available for your questions or comments. And with that.
Great. Thank you, Brittany. I know for everyone, that was a long presentation and there was a lot of information. Again, the slides are posted and available online for folks to kind of go back. Oh, and there we go. I love it. She's so prepared. Okay. So as always for our public consultation and our public, you know, workshop type meetings, now that the staff presentation is done, we'll go ahead and accept some comments being made. I unfortunately was not kind of following who was in what order there. So I'm just going to start off with David Rothbart. So if we could give David Rothbart the ability to be unmuted, that would be great. And then David, go ahead and introduce yourself, please. By the way, for the staff, I don't have any of that hosting ability, so I'll need your support.
There you go. Can you hear me now?
Great. Yes, perfect. We can, David.
Thanks. David Rothbart, representing Clean Water SoCal, the wastewater sector in Southern California. Appreciate the presentation, the very good outline of what's required in the Clean Air Act, Section 185. One thing I really would appreciate, especially for transparency for stakeholders, board members, anyone listening, it's really important to explain that South Coast has done a really good job being a very restrictive regulator. There is no air district in the country that is successful and restrictive as you are on stationary sources. The problem is we're not communicating to everyone on how good you are at that. And the problem here is the penalties being imposed, not because of the failure of South Coast or the stationary sources, it's a failure of EPA and others who are not regulating the mobile and federal sources adequately. That is exactly why we're here today. But I think it's important for everyone to understand it's not really the stationary sources that are the problem here. And some people may take this as the problem with non-attainment is the stationary sources. One, I think it's very valuable for everyone to understand that's not the dynamic. The Clean Air Act was written many, many years ago, assuming that stationary sources would be the problem, and that's not the current reality. So I really would think it would be appropriate to update this presentation for stationary source to put in a lot of things that are in your letter that was just sent out to EPA on the SIP disapproval. I think that's a great letter that illustrates that there's nothing you could do to get to attainment and what the problem really is. Not that you could change what's in the Section 185 penalty, but I think it's very valuable for people to understand this. So I'll stop there. I have some other comments, but I'll wait for others to chime in. Thank you.
Great. All right. Thank you, David. We hear you. We understand what you're saying. But as you noted, we're kind of, hands are a little bit tied on this one because of the words in the Clean Air Act. Okay, we're going to move on to Derek Marin. Derek, go ahead and unmute yourself. I don't hear you, Derek. So if you're unmuting yourself, do we give him the ability to unmute?
Can you hear me now?
There we sure can. Good morning.
So good morning. So I have a couple questions about
this. I'm sorry, Derek. Could you introduce yourself and your affiliate?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Derek Marin, Vista Paint Corporation.
Great.
So I do have a couple of questions about the baseline. Mm-hmm. And if I'm reading it correctly, it's based off, this is for VOC specifically. It's mm-hmm. based off of the past 2 years of the air emission reports. Is that correct?
The Clean Air Act requires the baseline actually to be the year, the attainment year emissions. However, Brittany, do you want to touch on, I think, what Derek is asking about when it comes to the alternative?
Yeah, exactly. So like what Mike said, the baseline is established for the attainment year. Right now, the US EPA doesn't have guidance for the 8-hour standards for an alternative baseline emissions. But in the rule, we do have proposed alternative baseline emissions, which would only come into effect should the US EPA also establish a similar guidance for these. It's on 29.
Let me state my concern.
If you're
so if it's based off of the actual emissions, if it's a downturn in the economy, this is going to apply specifically to manufacturing sites. The manufacturing location is going to be artificially low because of less demand. And then if it's a peak time in the economy, it's going to be artificially higher. So my concern is that there's going to be a penalization there when it's based off of the economy and demand. And my second concern is that for the determination of the 10-ton threshold, I'm assuming that's based off of what was originally submitted for a Title V permit. Is that correct?
That
is there going to be a reevaluation of the sites?
That is what EPA defines as a major source. So that's sort of... That's
So then here is my concern. I have actually been told by South Coast multiple times that we should not get out of Title V, even though our actual emissions are usually lower than 3 tons for VOC. So even though my facility is a Title V, we come nowhere close to that 10 tons. And I'm assuming other facilities are in similar positions where when originally they put in these Title V permits in the early 2000s, their manufacturing procedures were different. So their potential to emit was higher than what is actually the current potential to emit based off of the current technologies employed at the sites and the current technologies in the raw materials for the manufacturing sites being used. How can that be addressed?
So a couple of things here. So first off, Dirk, just so for your edification, I mean, again, a lot of these things that we're presenting are actually one, these are parameters that we did not generate. These are ones generated by EPA. So
I understand that. But I'm asking within the air district, how can we address this?
Okay. So if you're considered a major source, you're then subject to the fee. Now there are, you could talk to engineering, whether, you know, what's on your permits, what's, you know, blah, 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 but that's sort of a separate route of, you know, whether you're a major source or not. But again, we would, you know, that's the parameter by which we're just that by which one is either in or out. If we could take a moment here, I do see we might have someone here from engineering who can address. Give me one moment here. If we could bring Jason over. This is Jason Aspel. He's the head of the engineering and permitting division. Derek, who can maybe give you a little more insight on that. Jason, good morning. Jason, if you want to unmute yourself.
Yeah, sorry. I think I was being brought over. Can you hear me now?
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Derek. Jason Aspel, Deputy Executive Officer over Engineering and Permitting. If I'm hearing the situation correctly, you're in the Title V program, but your actual emissions are well below 80% of the Title V threshold. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
Yes.
Okay. So we do have a process, a Title V exemption process, where if you wish to, it requires an evaluation and we need to verify several things. But there is a permit application process where if you wish to be exempted from the Title V program, you can apply to do so. We can talk offline on that. You know, require lower emission caps to lock that in, but there is a process.
Okay. I know that I have talked with some of the stationary sources folks before about exiting the program. And at that time, it was always told, well, you might as well stay in it. It makes your reporting easier. So now it seems like we can get penalized for being in the program. So it looks like it's time to reevaluate again.
Right. It is a case by case, you know, business decision for everyone. And it also is dependent on your potential to emit for a lot of facilities. But what we can do is we can figure out the right team to talk with you. And we can have that discussion on how we can address your permits if that's the road you want to go down.
Actually, let me find something to let me get your name real quick so I can look you up after the meeting.
Jason Aspel, if you can see the screen, it's A-S-P-E-L-L.
I can't see the screen, unfortunately.
Okay.
Jason A-S-P.
E-L-L.
E-L-L.
And then my email address is jaspel@aqmd.gov. And I think...
First initial last name.
Yes, first and initial last name. And
AQMD.gov.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for your comment, Derek, too. You're exactly the type of facility that we're trying to get to attend these types of meetings so that you can be informed and plan ahead for this rule development.
All righty. Great. Thank you all for that. All right. We're moving on to Bill Quinn. Bill, good morning.
Morning. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Okay, Bill Quinn with CEEB, the California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance. Let me start by saying that we think that the fee is very unfair as it penalizes the facilities that have done the most to reduce emissions. That said, we recognize that this is a requirement of the Clean Air Act, which gives you little choice but to charge this fee. We know that the use of these fees is going to be determined in a separate effort next year, but we want to go on record as saying that we think that any use of this money should be used to achieve the maximum emission reductions possible. One point I want to ask specific to the proposal, we noticed that in Mojave, they have a similar rule. And in their rule, they're in a different situation. I think they're in violation of multiple standards. But in their rule, they have language where the facility is only charged one fee based on what that highest fee would be of the district being in violation of multiple standards. I think for South Coast, this is not a situation that will occur until several years from now, maybe 2032. But it still seems like it's something that would be good to consider and get into a rule now so we don't have to deal with it in 2032. So my request is that you take a look at the Mojave language and see if you can fit that into your rule. That's all. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Bill, for that comment. We will take a further look at that process and where they're at with that, and to see what that is. So, from our initial perspective, as you know, which I believe, you know, Brittany presented here today, is that from our read, it has been that these standards are considered independent and they apply. But we're interested in knowing a little further on what the other agencies are doing. Okay, we'll move on to Mike. Go ahead, Mike. You can talk and introduce yourself and your affiliation would be great.
Okay. Hi, Mike. How you doing? This is Mike Schaefer, Schaefer Environmental Consulting. Oh,
okay. Yes. How are you?
I represent a handful of facilities that potentially could be applicable to the rule. And I'm kind of following up on Bill Quinn's question he brought up. And I was curious, does the fee apply for the 1997 standard in 2026? And then is there going to be a second fee for the 2008 standard? Is that going to be the same fee, or is it going to be another fee? $11,000 per ton. And then probably another $11,000 per ton. Are there going to be two separate fees, or are they just going to be one? Or are we going to, as I think what Bill was alluding to, go with the highest of the two? You're not paying two separate fees.
At this point in time, we are proposing for the two separate fees. There is a different time frame for those, however. Brittany, do you want to touch on that? I know she brought back up the slide.
But in like 2034, are you going to be paying two fees at that point in time? And then on down the road, when the 2015 standard, are you going to be paying three fees?
I think that depends on where we're at with that with the 1997 standard. The way the act is written, and staff, correct me if I'm wrong, the fee doesn't apply if and when we meet the standard and we're determined to be in attainment. So if that occurs, then in theory that would stop. So they wouldn't be necessarily overlapped, but.
Probably a yes. We will be paying three fees. Is usually the case.
I want to be optimistic, Mike, that we'll be meeting standards. So,
okay. a question on the actual fee rate. EPA sets that. Is that going to change every year? Is that going to be bumped up? CPI. Is it going to 11,002 now, and it's, by the time we get there, it's going to be 15,000.
That is how it works. Yes.
Okay. And also the last question would be following up on Derek's inquiry for a facility that wants to get out of Title V that has that option. Is there a time frame right now when we would have to do it in order to not be assessed for the first year of the fee?
Yeah, so I do think it's kind of important that you move more quickly on that, because again, we're coming up to that to that date. Yeah, there you go.
And if so, next year's AER is going to be your baseline number. That's what it, in my read of it. So the number you put in for your, for most facilities, that is, next year will, your AER number will be your baseline number.
It'll be the 2024 emissions, which you would be submitting to us in 2025.
Correct. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. All right. Let's continue. I believe I saw Rita, Rita Loof. You can go and unmute yourself.
Hello. Good morning. Rita Loof with RadTech International, and we're the Association for Ultraviolet Electron Beam LED technology. I definitely wanted to echo some of the comments that have been made by David Rothbart. He's certainly been somewhat of a prophet on this type of rulemaking for many years. So it's very disappointing to see stationary sources get penalized like this when the district has recognized that even if 100% of stationary sources in the South Coast Basin were to shut down, the district still would not be in attainment. So I'm very concerned that this is a very punitive measure. I realize that it's coming from the EPA, but you know, it's been years of stakeholders clamoring to the district to approach the EPA with this type of issue. And it seems that there's been a missed opportunity there. So I'm very disappointed that it's gotten to this point, but here we are. Now, my question, Mike, is for facilities that have achieved early reductions. So I'm thinking of a facility that has gone from 25 tons down to 10 tons in the past few years versus a facility that has gone from 11 tons to 10 tons. How are those facilities treated? Is there any difference in how they're treated for purposes of the imposition of these fees?
Yeah, if you're talking about the years before that attainment year, Rita, it would not be reflected here. So it's pretty clear that that's the base year that's being utilized. So unfortunately, it doesn't take any considerations of previous. However, having said that, I do think as moving into the future, we will see a change because a number of facilities, I know a number of the reclaim facilities and the landing rules and meeting new BART limits and things like that and moving into cleaner technologies, we'll start seeing in the future, hopefully, a reduction then in, in their emission levels, which will affect whether or how much they would have to pay into that penalty fee. So that's, to me, the optimistic outlook for that.
Well, that doesn't sound optimistic from our perspective, because basically what you're saying is that the facilities that went above and beyond and took proactive measures to reduce their emissions early are not going to see any kind of benefit whatsoever. So I would really rethink that and try to come up with a way to thread that needle to give some sort of acknowledgement to the facilities that have already gone above and beyond. Now, the baseline level, so that all goes into the baseline calculation, I think. That's where that issue falls under. So can you just give me an example, and I'll give you the example and you just tell me how much is that facility going to pay? And this was going back to the discussion of how many fees. Is it two different types of fees or three types of fees? So let's just take one VOC facility at 10 tons per year. How much does that facility pay? Assuming the baseline calculation of, $11,922 per ton.
Brittany, yeah, you want to show the calculation again? So you could use this calculation read it for whatever kind of example you want. But in this particular one, as we noted here, the baseline emission was at, for the VOC was at 15, right? So you would apply, and it would be an 80% of the 15, and you take that off from the actual annual emissions for whatever year that you're doing that calculation. So the base year being 2024, if we're talking about a 2025 emission number 13, or again, as this is what I'm saying, is if it goes even lower than that in the following year, goes down to 12, you could find yourself in this calculation currently at 13, taking minus 80% of that 15, turns out to be 1 pound. But if you're in the future years, so I'm saying in 2026, let's say you drive some of those VOCs down, maybe using UVEV, right, equipment, that particular facility could go down to 12, and then you'd have 12 minus 12 would be zero, and they'd be paying no fee. So that's why I'm saying there's, you know, to drive in the future, some of those reductions in those emissions will actually assist them in either reducing the fee or avoiding. So that's.
So for this facility that you have here, the total amount of fees is $11,922.
Correct.
Or is that a per ton?
So 11,922 is a per ton, right? But you have to do, oh, I'm sorry, Kalam's shaking her head. It's just a fee rate, but go ahead.
That's what I'm trying to clarify, because it doesn't say if the 11,922 is per ton. So now I'm back to multiplying, or if that's the total fees and if the per ton rate has already been taken into consideration in the calculation.
Let me try to explain it a little bit here. The fee rate is around $12,000, and that's a per ton fee rate. But for the example that was on the screen, because the 20% that the facility has to pay is 1 ton, and that's why the total fee is the same as the fee rate. So in your example that the facilities has 10 tons of VOC emissions in the baseline, and let's say that 10 tons continue in the future. And so the obligations will be anything that exceed 80%. So it would be 2 tons, and the total fee obligation will be 2 tons times the fee rate that you see that's highlighted in green here. So it will be about $24,000 for that year.
Thank you. That's the clarification I wanted to get. And then going back to the other gentleman's question on how many fees, then potentially you're looking at that 22,000 or 24,000 times two or times three, correct?
Yeah, the fee obligation will be the fee rate multiplying by anything that is in excess of the 80% of baseline.
And then on top of that, that's just for a VOC facility. So if you already have NOx as well, and you fall under the major source category, that then goes on in addition to your VOC fees.
That will only be true if you're a major source of both NOx and a VOC. So if you're only a major source of VOC, the fee obligation is by pollutant. So your fee obligation will only be for VOC emissions.
Exactly. Well, I also am really concerned with the lack of commitment on how the fees are going to be used. And, you know, the rule seems to say we're going to collect the fees now, and then we'll tell you later how we're going to use that revenue, other than the 10% administration fee. So I would really hope that you specify in the staff report a couple of things. Number one, how the fees are going to be used. And I would hope it's some sort of a relief for the facilities that have already reduced their emissions and have achieved early emission reductions, and those that will commit to achieving emission reductions, because according to the staff report, the alternative is for the facility to reduce their emissions by 20%. And that's a way to avoid the fee, right?
Well, right. I mean, again, reducing in the future years, as this calculation will take place in, you know, in each year. based on the previous year's, you know.
So, yeah, I hope you put in, you know, more details about how the fees are going to be used and give some thought to how those fees can be used for the benefit of the facilities that are already achieving emission reductions above and beyond what the district has required. So that's one issue that I think should be clarified in the staff report. The other issue is related to what Jason was saying about getting out of the Title V program. And it should not be a one-on-one negotiation with each facility that comes in to sit down with your engineers to figure out how it's going to impact that facility, because that is not really good public policy making at the rule level. The rule should lay out, at least in the staff report, the alternative that facilities can petition to leave the Title V program, because the example that was given of the facility that's really not a major source, but it's in the Title V program, that's very problematic. So I would really urge you to flesh that out a little bit. Thank you.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you, Rita. Appreciate those comments. And, you know, with regards to, you know, again, we've raised this before about, you know, about how those will be spent. The Act, the Cleaner Act, doesn't actually define how it could be can be spent, but we do believe that we want to have that conversation, you know, in a public process with our stakeholders. I think there's a variety of interests out there, and we'll just kind of, you know, flush that as we kind of move along. Again, this collection, the first round of a collection, is not going to be occurring until 2026, and there could be a lot that could also take place in that interim as well, and a lot of new ideas as well. So we want to be give that opportunity. Okay, let's move on to Adrian Martinez.
Mike, can I just address the Title V?
Sure.
So that's all detailed in our Regulation 30. Wouldn't be addressed in a fee rule for that process. And I don't think we're driving anyone to be exempted. It's simply if a facility decides on their own with their own business process, if that is somewhat a path they wish to take for themselves. Staff wouldn't be involved with that. And like any other permit modification, that business would decide to proceed with that.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate that. Yeah, because for us on the rules side, it's pretty clear that someone's applicable if a major source. Now, in that process of defining, as Jason said, you'll go through another route in making that happen. Okay, Adrian Martinez. You can go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi, good morning. Adrian Martinez with Earth Justice. A couple things. First, I want to just suggest that the Air District not do what Bill Quinn recommended. We think it's patently unlawful to do that. And then besides, it would create the weird precedent that you know, you'd have the same fee amounts if you were violating one standard versus four or five ozone standards at the same time. It just doesn't make sense. It would also, I think, destroy this rule, because you already have a fee program in place, albeit it's an equivalency program that Earth Justice and other groups have vigorously fought and think is inequitable. So I just wanted to note that. I'd proceed with caution if you're going to take that approach, and you're likely to be met with some serious legal challenges to that approach. The second thing I want to reiterate is, you know, this, if you lump all stationary sources together, and I get it, this was a big part of evading the fee for the 1979 standards. Hey, we're the most well-controlled in the country. We shouldn't have a fee. But since then, we've had the reclaim transition, where we understand that a large percentage of the equipment for our stationary sources are not at BART. And so I think we need to kind of go with open eyes into that. And I think that needs to be articulated. Stationary sources have received a decade of benefits by not being charged the Section 185 fees for the 1-hour ozone standard. And I think it's important that staff provide some evidence of who has benefited. It's not your mom and pop company. When we crunched the data from 2022 to 2018, we saw that the primary beneficiaries or the largest beneficiaries were large oil companies like Tesoro, Torrance, Ultramar, Beta Offshore. These are the folks who benefited from this. And these are facilities that are emitting, sometimes 1-2 tons of NOx per day. And so as you're kind of looking at this, I think it's really important to understand that folks got a decade of benefit for, not having the fee. And the final point, as you're figuring out what to do with spending the funds, I know that there's a lot of concern about equity for the businesses and whatnot, but I'd encourage you to look at the equity for the communities near these oil refineries that for a decade have had no relief under Section 185 from this provision. So I think that's going to be an important part. And finally, we encourage the Air District to adopt this rule swiftly. We need to get it over the finish line so we can move on to additional rules. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Adrian. Appreciate those comments. And we're looking to take the rule soon in June. So hopefully. Allison, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Good morning. This is Allison Torres, and I'm representing Clean Water SoCal. We submitted a written comment letter, but just one thing that I wanted to mention here today is the need for clarification in the rule related to synthetic minor source facilities. It was kind of discussed a little bit here today, but we believe that there should be clarifying language in the rule that synthetic minor source facilities are not subject to the fees under the rule. So we just like that to staff have that consider that, excuse me, in the rule language. And that's all I have for today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Allison. Appreciate that. We have heard that comment. Wanted to make sure that's being addressed. All right. Andrew Silva, if you want to go and unmute yourself. Andrew, welcome.
Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Just wondering, you guys were guessing, what, $25 million a year? Was it that much?
I believe potentially? There's an estimate, I think, initially somewhere around that. And we, of course, would predict, again, as folks continue, meeting BART limits as we go into the future, those numbers would change, and then the overall collection would change. Okay. Was that what you were asking, Andrew?
Yeah, that was
okay. All right. Thank you.
Nice and simple.
Okay, no worries. All right. We'll move on to Steve Jepson. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, this is Steve Jepson, Executive Director for Clean Water SoCal. We represent over 80 water, wastewater public agencies in Southern California, most of which are in the South Coast Air Quality Management District area. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today. What a great workshop and excellent presentation, Brittany. Well done. You deserve some props for that. Of course, I want to support the comments from David Rothbart and Allison Torres and emphasize in our comment letter that we submitted, we pointed out what some neighboring air districts have done in their approach to the Section 185 fees, including Mojave Desert and San Joaquin, and would encourage the rulemakers to take a look at that. Our facilities perform an essential public service treating human waste. We're already at BACT. We can't relocate. This is all publicly funded. So the fees incurred by our agencies are just going to come out of the public pocket. We hope those can be used wisely and hopefully for emission reductions in our sector. But we also want to emphasize that in the event that US EPA provides some equivalency guidance, this rule has language such that it can capitalize on that guidance. So there's some flexibility in the rule to pivot in the event that EPA changes its guidance. That's all I have for right now. Thanks for the opportunity to comment.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Steve. Really appreciate that. And like we said, we do look forward to having that public process and hearing all these really great ideas that you guys are sharing with us today. Okay, David, I see you've got your hands raised. I recall you wanted to have a revisit, so welcome back.
Apologize for all the comments from my sector, but as you can see, we're very concerned about the impact on our public facilities. As far as one slide talked about backsliding, I wanted to just highlight my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, if we have this rule, it's entered into the SIP, the only way we could make adjustments, just say hypothetically, as Steve says, if EPA comes up with some type of guidance that may be applied in the future, if this rule is entered in the SIP, there's anti-backsliding rules that would prohibit us from changing the rule in that case. If I am correct, wouldn't it be wise to have some flexibility built in the rule saying if there is guidance from EPA, that this rule will self-correct? I just wanted to bring that up now because we may not be able to undo it later. Mike, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's sort of one of those situations where it's like easier said than done, right? Because it just depends on what that guidance would say. We can't predict what that would be, right?
Exactly. So if we can't, we don't know what it's going to say, would it be useful like other air districts to have a caveat saying in that event, the rule could be reopened and reconsidered, at least something that doesn't lock you in the event it's approved in the SIP.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, mind you, even if something gets approved, it doesn't preclude us from not being able to go back, right, and open up a rule and make changes to do those corrective actions. There's nothing stopping us from being able to do that. I think ultimately, though, just my general concern is always about passing a rule that we, at least to the best of our ability, is going to be approved by EPA, right, and not kind of itself get caught up with conditions.
Well, I gotta jump in on that. Your SIP comment letter on the Section 179 penalties, we're kind of saying one thing on one side of our mouth and something else on the other side of our mouth with Section 185. I mean, I understand the reason for 185, that if someone's going to collect the penalties, it's better that you guys do it than EPA, because EPA could redecorate the White House with the money if they wanted to, whereas exactly, you guys would use it for emission reductions. I get it. But the problem is what I said earlier. The problem isn't that you guys let someone off the hook. You know, maybe there's facilities that are not at backed. I'm just saying for my sector, we're good actors. We do our best. We have the lowest emissions we can. But the bottom line is going to be we can't get to attainment by ratcheting down on stationary sources. That's not the problem. The problem's the mobile sources, the federal sources. Your letter to EPA is very clear on that. You've been set up to fail, but we shouldn't be passing along that pain the EPA is coming down on the wrong sources. The problem here is we need the mobile sources to clean up. If we have other problems for, you know, environmental justice issues or something like that, that might be site specific, but this penalty is for non-attainment with ozone in the region. Yeah. It's not a site specific penalty. So I just want everyone to understand that, you know, what we're doing here is trying to address something out of the Clean Air Act, and we should do it wisely and do it in such a way that if there is some difference in opinion, that will happen, by the way, somehow there's going to be some readjustment to what EPA is going to require. And all I'm saying is, consistent with your SIP comment letter, we should at least look forward saying if there is adjustments that may happen, let's make sure this rule could be adjusted. That's all.
For sure. For sure. We'll act accordingly. Okay, great. Thank you, David. Appreciate that. Adrian, see your hands raised again. Go ahead, Adrian.
Yes. Hi, Adrian Martinez with Earth Justice. I just want to say we would oppose any language that was some type of contingency. We think the Clean Air Act's clear on this. And then the other thing I'll just remind folks is, you look at the top 10 emitters and what would have been the highest fee payers if there was an actual fee on stationary sources for the 1 hour ozone standard, the vast majority of them are making products that get burned in mobile sources. The oil industry is by far the largest emitter in this industry, in this sector. So I know folks want to blame the mobile sources, and we want to clean up mobile sources, and we want to compel EPA to do better and more. But I think the 2022 AQMP was abundantly clear that we have to get to zero emissions in mobile and stationary sources. And so I think while stationary sources are lower than mobile sources, we still need to pursue emission reductions. And I think that's why you're seeing several rules, 1146.2, 1153.1, 1111, 1121, that are addressing these non-mobile sources. And then the other thing is, I think stationary sources, to the credit of David and others, did an incredible job lobbying during the last round of Section 185 fees. They've gotten, maybe people will discredit this, but I think it's a free pass for the last decade of paying the fee. So it seems like it's equitable given where the vast majority of these fees are occurring, and how the Clean Air Act is written, to just collect the fee. I agree. Let's spend it on good things. Let's give more benefit to those who are early actors and doing the right thing. Let's address environmental injustice with this fee. But I think this attempt to wiggle the way out of it, it doesn't make sense. And then the final point I'll just make is that, the South Coast plan is predicated upon getting billions of dollars a year to pay to clean up. And so there is no equivalency. There is no extra couch change or dollars lying around to take an equivalency approach. So it's not clear, that you could even get out of this in some kind of equivalency approach. So I just wanted to flag that, that's yeah. Just our position. And we would oppose that type of language that, would wiggle its way out of this rule.
Right. Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Adrian. Appreciate that. Those comments. Brittany, I see you're highlighting something here. But we'll move on to Rita. Rita, you want to go and unmute yourself? There you go.
Thank you. I just wanted to support the comments that were made by Allison Torres regarding the synthetic miners. What I see here is that it's very different for a facility that's emitting 3 tons per year versus a facility that's emitting 3 tons per day. And other than the amount of fees they pay, they're not treated any differently. Whenever we've advocated for exemptions and incentives for the facilities that are going above and beyond what the district currently requires, and they're above and beyond what BACT requires, we're met with great resistance from the district. So it does seem like a kind of a not really well organized approach, or at least the message is not really consistent, that either VOCs are a problem or they're not, and either stationary sources are a problem or they're not. Because for purposes of getting incentives for facilities that are reducing their VOCs, the district has been really resistant to provide those kind of incentives. And this is something that I've been saying for many, many years, that it's a very punitive approach. So one thing to keep in mind, going back to what Jason was saying about each facility making their own determination, when manufacturer moves out of the South Coast Basin, because ultimately they have to make a business decision, when that manufacturing facility moves out of the basin, the goods are still being manufactured somewhere. And they might be, in another state, for example, and then they're going to be moved into the basin by trucks or by rail. And so the goods movement emissions are going to go up by definition. So then we wonder why we have a goods movement problem. And a lot of the policies that are being promulgated by South Coast are promoting this overall problem of emissions coming into the basin, which is you know, what ultimately South Coast wants to reduce. So I really hope that you can put in some language in here to clarify and to assist. So Jason mentioned Reg 30, and I'm aware of Reg 30, but many small and medium-sized businesses are not. And I'm certainly not suggesting that this would be a Reg 30 rulemaking right here, right now, under the Rule 317.1 report, but at least some clarification or some guidance that that process is available would be really helpful. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Rita. I think we can do that and put that somewhere in the staff report. Okay, back to Mike Schaefer. Mike.
All right. Now you can hear me probably.
We heard you before, but we can hear you again. Sure.
Yeah, sorry to raise my hand again, but I wanted to add to Allison's synthetic miner comment. Is if there was a possibility to put something in the exemptions that facilities that have filed for synthetic miner application on such and such a date would be exempt from going forward with the fees, mostly because and I know Jason's not going to like to hear this, but I have a couple of facilities where their Title V renewals and also a request to consolidate facilities have been outstanding for about 5, and I think even one close to about 8 years. So wouldn't want to be caught in, you file for a synthetic miner and then you get caught into the fee loop until, the application gets processed. So if we could add something into the exemptions that if facilities file for a synthetic miner on such, on a deadline date, and then you wouldn't be included into the Rule 317.1's fees. That's okay. All.
Yeah. All right. We'll look further into that, and then how EPA kind of views the synthetic miners in this process. So, okay. Let's move on. Do we have any other questions or comments to be made now at this point in time? Again, if so, just click the raise hand button at the bottom of the screen. We'll go ahead and give you the ability to unmute yourself. I think there's been some really great comments made. We had close to 110 folks joining us today at our public consultation meeting. Folks have already submitted some of our some written comments, which we'll have responses back in our staff report on those. And again, we'll if any further suggestions on things put in the staff report, for clarifications, et cetera, as we continue our process. All right, does staff have anything they wanted to add? Okay, we do see one other hand raised here. Let's go ahead and take that, although I'm not seeing who it is yet. Okay, whoever's got their hand raised, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself.
Ted. Good morning, everyone. Ted from the City of Fountain Valley. First of all, I want to thank you for staff for having these presentations. And I always like to also thank you to all the public for their comments, public comments. And I'd like to know, would you be able to email us the recording of today's presentations?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Okay, great. Could you just do me a favor, though, and you see Brittany's email there on the screen. If you can provide the information, your contact information would be great.
Okay. Okay. I will make sure I reach out to Brittany then. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Ted. All righty. Do we have any other more comments at this time? Well, again, I want to thank folks for joining us today on our public consultation meeting and then providing us any feedback. More sooner the better is always good, and so we can adjust accordingly. Once again, as a reminder, in about 2 weeks, we're going to be presenting pretty much a larger overview, not as much detail, to our Stationary Source Committee as well. It's a subset of our full board as we continue taking this to our full board come June. Okay, then I will let folks go. Thank you again so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. and hope everyone has a safe and healthy rest of the week. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.